Learn live in the classroom at Online Trading Academy's Financial Education Center in Bellevue. You'll have access to state-of-the-art workstations where you can learn on a professional trading platform. Text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682 to register for a free half-day workshop and learn more.
Welcome to the final hour of the final show of this week for the Tom and Curley Show. John Curley away today, raising money for a good cause in California. He'll be back on Monday. Andrew Walsh from TBTL Podcast is here, ushering us through a Friday morning. So if you've been listening to Ursula's constant updates, there's a lot of hullabaloo down at Seattle City Council. And I think Mayor Durkin's name is being batted around. It's being used in vain a lot. The chambers are primarily filled with supporters of the head tax, which is not what it was like a few days ago. On, I think it was on Wednesday when you had an even split, I think Hannah Scott was reporting, between anti-head tax people and pro-head tax people. Right now, what's being debated mostly, Andrew, is Mayor Durkin's kind of compromise proposal, where she gives a bit and takes a bit.
Yeah, so just to lay this out as quickly as I think I can, and hopefully accurately, you had an original proposal by several council members to tax employees of companies that gross more than $20 million per year in Seattle. The tax would be about $500 per employee. That was getting a lot of pushback from Amazon, other large employers, and it was going to last.
And unions.
And of course, and the unions, yes. Because you know the unions that would be involved in building, you know, these.
Yes.
Structures. Durkin came out, I believe it was yesterday, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Last night, I believe, with a more moderate measure. It would cut about everything in half. It would cut the tax in half. It would cut, obviously, the tax revenue in half as well. And it would expire after 5 years and then have to be renewed.
Right.
And, of course, what's happening in City Hall today is you have mostly Shama Sawant supporters who are saying, no, even the original proposal didn't go far enough. We want to double that. And they're the most vocal crowd right there who are saying neither of these plans go far enough. So you kind of have those three camps,
yeah,
right now.
Three tiers. Raise $40 million for the homeless, $75 million for the homeless, or $150 million for the homeless. Now, none of those chanters have a vote. It comes down to the nine committee members. Now, right now, this is just a finance committee that's meeting. This is not the full council of vote. We'll see how things ultimately break down. We have Mike Lewis down there, and as soon as anything happens in terms of a vote, one way or the other, we'll certainly let you know. But right now, it looks like the breakdown is, of the nine, you've got four siding with the mayor with her compromise,
mm-hmm.
and five pushing for at least the $75 million head tax, or the head tax that will raise $75 million, and we'll have to see how it's broken down. We talked about this a lot in the beginning of the show, but I like the way the mayor is working. She is being maybe slammed most hard by the people behind the proposal, the five council members that at least as of now are still in favor of it. But it seems to me that this might be the way to go. The sunset clause is outraging the Shama Sawant supporters, but it does make some sense. I'm surprised. 5 years even seems like a long time to see how, you know, if it's working or not. But the idea is that you do not want to throw good money after bad. And if you can establish after 5 years this isn't working, we're certainly not going to make this a permanent thing, then you have to reassess and re-vote. And that seems to me a solid compromise, because our understanding is Amazon is on board with this. Amazon came out
With a compromise.
Yeah, with a compromise. They were against the head tax. This is still a head tax. I mean, you can see this as a partial victory against Amazon and for Amazon, because it's cut in half. If Amazon goes along with it, I think we should take what we can get.
I think this is what leadership is all about. And you know, I don't know if any of my even further lefty friends are listening right now. And if so, I apologize. I guess I will turn in my liberal card to you later. But, you know, I support the original plan, okay. Not the Durkin compromise. That's where my heart is. That's where my head is. And I think that that sounds like a good plan. The thing that I like most about it, aside from the fact that it raises double the money, is that it specifically puts the money into creating new affordable housing. I think that is the number one priority.
Yeah.
Durkin's plan is not as specific. It goes to services. And it seems to me like more nibbling around the edges and not dealing with the problem. So that's where I am on the record for that.
Yeah.
Having said that, the people who are throwing bombs at her now, figurative, figurative bombs. Everything's fine. Everything's fine at City Hall.
Did you hear it's the Durkin Bezos plan.
And listen, I understand that if you are, these are people who are fighting the good fight, I think, who are kind of besmirching her name. But this is a real, this is almost, I feel like, her first real test of leadership, you know, and that is what you have to do. You have to bring a bunch of people with diverse interests to the table and get them talking. And she seems to be trying to do that. While I am not a fan necessarily of her plan, I think that we need to at least give her the respect to try to find a place where everybody can come together and find a solution. One thing that I actually do kind of like, or can say that I understand where it comes from, is the 5-year sunset on this, because I don't think that every tax necessarily has to have a sunset on it. I think there are some that should be in perpetuity. Did I say that right? In perpetuity?
Yes, you did. Okay, good. And you mean like a property tax?
No, okay, I don't think that we should like relitigate those every 5 years, 10 years. I think that that can often slow down government and be bad. In this case, though, we are dealing with a problem that we clearly have not created enough of a roadmap for. We don't know what's going to work right now. And 5 years from now, in 2023, the situation may have, the goalposts may have moved, the ground beneath us may have moved. Now, that could have happened both literally and figuratively, I hate to say. And so to say 5 years from now, if it was a good plan, it was working, hopefully we still have some right-minded people in government who are going to continue it. And if not, maybe we have to say, wow, we spent a lot of money and it was supposed to go towards low-income housing and it's not working, and we have some other plans we want to try. I think that is completely reasonable, just focusing on that sunset.
And I do think that you raise a good point. What the mayor is doing, it's a compromise. If you get both sides together to agree to something that, and it works, I suppose we'll take it. But it really is nibbling around the edges, because $40 million, we just did a story yesterday about this, I think it's a McKinsey report that says we need $400 million to handle this, a year to handle the homeless crisis properly. So, yeah, what $40 million will do, not that much, but at least the way I see it is it keeps – if we keep the business community working with government as opposed to against government, that that's better in the long term, even though I understand the frustration. If you're dealing with the housing shortage and the affordability issue and the homeless on a daily basis, you're going to be frustrated. Oh, yeah, you're just kicking it down the road. 5 years. Who knows what's going to happen in 5 years? We need this now. People are starving now. People are shelterless now. We need to address it sooner.
But I love the way, anyway, though, that like we came in here and I was definitely more the proponent of the bigger tax and you were going to take the more moderate view. But now that I have kind of said, you know, let's at least listen to the mayor. Let's let her have this moment of leadership. Now you're like, yeah, it's just nibbling around the edges. It's not going to do anything. We need $400 million. Like you and I, man, I don't know.
I'm nothing if not a gracious host.
I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
Okay, so now that we've dealt with the serious local news of the day, let's talk about something much more gentle in spirit. What is coming up this Sunday, Andrew?
Who are the Mariners playing? Not sure. Are you talking about
baseball,
Mother's Day?
Mother's Day, yes. Of course, there's an article about Mother's Day, and we figure we at least need to address the issue. The case against spending money on Mother's Day, an article complaining about how it's become another one of these multi-million dollar holidays where the wrong kind of people are cashing in, and where is the mother lost in all of this?
Yeah, the website Quartz has a really interesting kind of backgrounder on Mother's Day. I didn't, maybe this is more common knowledge than I realize, but it was founded by Anna Jarvis of West Virginia back in 1908. She wanted it to be a holy day. I'm reading from Quartz here. Uh-huh. She wanted it to be a holy day to honor her own mother's work ethic and strength. And then she kind of advocated for it to become kind of a national holiday. And she got her wish. It became an official holiday in 1914. But what this article argues is that she would be disgusted to see how kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Commercialized. It's become over the years. She said, this is a day that you set aside for, you know, to honor your mom. Maybe at most get her a white rose, did it say, or a white carnation as a symbol, but that was it. Yeah. And even before she died, which was, you know, decades and decades ago, she was seeing it become commercialized. And since then, I mean, it is just big, big business.
I think she died in like 1928, and she was complaining how commercialized it was back then.
I know.
Can you imagine what, you know, talk about rolling over in your grave. Yeah, the idea is how best to honor mothers and, you know, how to handle it. And it's not, although there may be a lot of mothers. In fact, we haven't made this pitch to anybody all day, but we love to hear from you. If you want to write to mynorthwest.com inbox or text us at 98973. If you're a mother out there, how would you want to be honored or respected? I remember when we had two great kids, but you know, Mother's Day when we were raising kids when they were young, the best thing for my wife Paige was to be I take the kids somewhere
left alone,
yes, let her just kind of luxuriate in her, in the absence of family.
You take the kids to go see a French film while she's just like at home and getting some rest.
And the idea is, I mean, so it depends on the stage of life, but how do mothers would mothers want to be appreciated? Maybe they, I mean, I'm sure there are some mothers that love the big to-do if, you know, there's a big, if you take her out to dinner or bring her tons of flowers and candy. I don't know, but I think that the pitch behind Mother's Day is to honor the mother and respect the mother and not make it like, you know, Christmas morning with in terms of presents.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It is based on the individual, and everybody knows what kind of works in their families. The one thing that I would say here, and this is important, is Anna Jarvis, she did make it clear that if any of this commercialization, any of these companies that are selling flowers or chocolates or experiences, if they advertise on Cairo Radio, she 100% supports you buying those goods and services. I mean, she said that before she passed away. She was a huge fan, and she understands what's important.
Yeah, very good.
But again, I would like to hear from other people, too, like especially if you're somebody who is has celebrated Mother's Day with special traditions that are not focused on buying things. I would especially love to hear, like, what are your special cashless Mother's Days like? And how do people do that again? I actually can't remember. You just go to mynorthwest.com, inbox. Yeah, I haven't worked here in a long time.
That's right. And or text us at 98973. I think that would be great. And by the way, I don't think there are enough Mother's Days. You know, ever since my wife, we had our first child, I realized that I think birthdays, we celebrate birthdays all wrong. We should not be celebrating the person who was birthed that day. We should be celebrating the mothers who birthed the kids.
Oh, you're talking about decentralizing Mother's Day.
I think, well, that's one way to put it. I think,
like, get rid of Mother's Day and instead make your birthday a celebration of your mom.
Every birthday that your mother, every time your mother has birthed, that should be a celebration of your mom, not you.
And then it incentivizes, sorry, I just want to really kind of go with the economics of this. It incentivizes moms to have more kids.
Oh, believe me.
You're like, oh man, I celebrate my birthday five times a year because I had five kids.
Yes, but most moms know their kids are not that responsible.
Yeah. This is a fascinating concept you have. I would pay money to hear you and Dave Ross break this down for like 45 minutes.
That's hilarious. No, I really do think that mothers are underappreciated. Okay, now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Uh-oh.
How are you selling Mother? How are you celebrating Mother's Day this Sunday?
Oh, Tommy, I am a bad son. Like, there's just no getting around that. You're putting me on the spot, and I have to be honest. You know, I have not lived in the same state as my mom. I grew up in Ohio. She moved away to Arizona. When I was still in high school.
Okay.
And so, you know, and we've both moved around a lot.
Yeah.
So
how convenient for
you. I mean, back in the day, I would actually at least always send a Hallmark card. Like, my family was huge on cards.
Okay.
And of course, I grew up with two grandmothers, my mom and my stepmom, who I had, by high school, who I'm very close to. And so I would always, you know, buy the four cards, send them out. And then as I've gotten older, like, I don't know if I'm just kind of like done with the whole kind of Hallmarkization. Yeah. That makes it sound like I'm actually standing for some principle. I'm actually just lazy.
Yeah.
I think we've all just either gotten comfortable with or accepted the fact that what you're going to get from me on Mother's Day, I now have one grandma and stepmom and a mom. And so I will set aside a chunk of time so that I can call them all and actually have real conversations if they want to have them. My grandma is like well into her 90s now. She's usually, you call her, she appreciates it, and then she wants to get off the phone as fast as possible because all of her grandkids are calling her. But, you know, also to make that phone call, but to make sure you're not just like calling her while you're on your way to going to do something, but, you know, calling and being ready to have some conversations and chat with mom for a while. That's what I do. What about your situation?
Well, not to kind of rub it in, but mom has five sons and four of us live in the area, but our son from California is up and we're all going to spend Mother's Day at mom's house. She's still living in her own house with a big barbecue in the backyard with all five of her sons and her daughters-in-law.
Well, maybe I should come to that.
Oh, yeah, please do.
I'm going to bring a big bouquet of white roses.
Yeah, that would be great. You look close enough. You could be a tangy. We all, until I turned 50 and shaved my beard because it turned into Santa Claus's beard, we all have beards.
Really?
And all that. You'd fit right in, Andy.
Yeah, no, I would definitely do that.
Okay, so what do we have? Do we have any time for one last story? What do you want to talk
here.
About, Andrew?
Do you
guest host choice?
Okay, guest host choice. We got to talk about this Amazon Echo thing little bit here for a second.
Okay.
I'm not going to say the name, the colloquialism that everybody calls that device by, because if you do, I'll set off a bunch of people's devices. So we'll call it the Echo. But we were reading an article earlier today that it turns out this is only happening in laboratories right now, but computer science folks are realizing that they can put kind of secret coded tones, sounds, and words that you will not hear. If you're listening to music on your Amazon Echo, in theory, somebody could bury a subliminal message in that music that doesn't affect you and your brain, but only the computer can hear. You can unlock certain functions of somebody else's Amazon Echo device.
Yes.
If you hide certain sounds and tones in music. And that is scaring some people because that is like, that's a gateway to hackerism right there.
I think that's classic. The kind of, anytime we have new technology, how is that new technology going to bite us back?
Right.
And this is a good example of it. Now, I don't have an Amazon Echo device.
Neither do I. So, I sometimes talk to my phone. I sometimes say, okay, G word. You know, I'm not going to say because I don't want to say it. Like, you know, especially if I'm driving. But, okay, G word.
Yeah.
What's the...
But the fact that it can be, that you can be manipulated by the technology in your, I mean, this is classic science fiction terminology, but it seems so, it's so domesticated, it doesn't feel like a real threat. And that's the brilliance of these threats. I just don't, I have enough trust in technology that, yes, you can hack technology, but I'm assuming that the technologists will be able to devise protections for the hacking, you know, enough that it will stay apace.
And that's
how's
why
that?
People are doing this in laboratories right now. There's no real threat out there. It's only theoretical. But let me give you a better example, and then I think we need to check in on the news. Because imagine this. It's 10 years from now, and you're living in a real smart home, right? Like, your internet is connected to the web, your garage door is, the locks on your door is your security system, and you have one of these devices, which is also plugged into all of that, and then you're listening to the latest R. Kelly song because you're an awful person, and, you know, some hacker put a code in there, and now suddenly all of your doors unlock, or... Maybe for some reason they order more milk for you or what have you. So as everything becomes more connected, it could get a little bit more difficult.
Okay, and now coming up next, you'll never guess. The Know-It-All Quiz brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino with no quiz.
Oh, my. You could knock me over with a feather. Are you telling me that John didn't come through on his day off?
Thanks to John, Andrew, who is really taking the day off, we have no quiz. So here is your quiz. Remember this phone number and call in when we come back from break. We'll tell you when. 1-888-973-5476. Again, that's 1-888-973-5476. We'll ask you to call that number when we come back. Don't do it now. And the first caller will win two tickets to the May 18th performance of Aida by the Seattle Opera. Fantastic opera and fantastic production.
This Tom and Curly podcast is brought to you in part by Farrah.com. If you're getting ready to sell your home, do it in a way that's more transparent and will save you thousands of dollars in commission fees. It's Farrah. All the services you need when selling your home and no listing commission. Find out all about it at Faira.com. F-A-I-R-A.com. Now, the Tom and Curly Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, Andrew Walsh filling in for John Curly. And right now, it's time for our know-it-all quiz. Now, John did not send us the quiz that he promised, and so our quiz today was to try to remember the number I gave you right before we went to break. And if you do remember that number, call it now, be the first caller. This quiz is brought to you by Muckleshoot Bingo, and today someone's going to win. That's right, we've been talking about this all week. Two tickets to the May 18th performance of Seattle Opera's Aida, showcasing Verdi's power to translate human emotions into magnificent music. Find tickets today at seattleopera.org or be the first caller to... Oh, it looks like we already got somebody maybe on the line. That is excellent.
Were you going to try to not give the number to see if that was the quiz?
That was what we were going to do. See if it was, you know... So at least there is some element, not purely of chance,
right,
but of knowing something. Knowing that John didn't come through.
Right.
I can't wait to find out what John's excuse is for not delivering. But anyway, if we get the high sign from Andrew Lanier, we'll know that someone is lucky enough to go see a May 18th performance of Seattle Opera's Aida. Somebody right in front of me as we were going out to the lobby said, "This is the most opera. And it really is, because huge sets, huge
just
chorus,
epic,
and everything is a epic at all scales. So anyway, very good, very good. Okay, very good. See,
oh, did you do that on purpose?
No.
Oh man,
I'm just naturally that talented.
I love
Andrew.
It.
Okay,
I love it.
So we do, because we don't have a quiz. We do have time to talk about a few more stories we didn't get a chance to talk about, and one that I kind of like that we had to zip by. Is this a resourceful Chicago man? And I give him a lot of credit, at least initially I did. There's a guy who decided, I think just for giggles, to fill
and
out...
money giggles.
Yes, yes. I know, don't ruin the story,
so,
though,
oh,
for
did
me.
I spoil it? You know, there are no money giggles. Sorry.
There's a thing. He decided to make a postal change. He filled out one of those applications and said, you need a change of address. And he changed the mailing address of the UPS corporate headquarters and redirect and change it to his number, which he did. And suddenly he was getting thousands upon thousands of pieces of mail. We'll just put it that way. At that point, I just thought, this is a great, to me, it feels like performance art. This is brilliant. Just by filling out something and sending it in, you can actually redirect a corporation's mail to your own address. Now, it could have been to anybody else's address. And at that point, I thought, I love this guy. I mean, what a
funny
stunt.
Prank.
That's
well,
right.
Can I just say one thing? Because you might say, like, how is it possible to have something like that happen? Well, I just moved recently, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
And so we had to fill out those change of address cards. And usually what they do is they will confirm with you in various ways. You will get both an email from the postal service saying, we received a change of address. Is this you? Is that correct? And usually those say, if this was you, you don't have to say anything.
Okay,
we're fine.
Okay.
Your address has been changed. If this was a mistake, contact us. And you usually get a package in the mail as well.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a huge company like UPS, you get something from the postal service.
Yeah.
It probably just got thrown away
got
lost in the mail.
Right. Yeah.
Now, to pick up where I'll give it back to you. So now this guy is receiving, he lives in a one bedroom apartment.
Right.
He is receiving, I don't know if it's all the corporate mail, but a big chunk of the corporate mail from UPS right at his door that he put a box on his porch. He was getting so much mail.
So it's over,
it was overflowing. So the mailmen are just like, all right, this must be, I guess UPS changed their headquarters. I guess it's a one-bedroom apartment now. Sounds about right to me.
So anyway, so there's your great artistic performance art stunt version of the story. Unfortunately, this guy wasn't as pure of heart as I want a performance artist to be. In the course of this great, clever bit, he ended up depositing nearly a dozen, they say, of checks that arrived in the mail to the tune of $58,000 into his own bank account. He ended up getting caught, because after all, that's not just hijinks. That's stealing.
Yeah.
Right out and out. And they ended up, his name is Henderson Spruce, by the way. They ended up catching him. He's facing federal mail theft and fraud charges, which carry a maximum penalty of 5 and 20 years. So he's going to pay the price of any
crook. Could be 25 years in prison if he got the whole thing. I mean, listen, you don't mess with the Fed, son. What in the story, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm trying to figure out if I'm missing something. Was it just your good-hearted nature that you assumed that this was a prank that then he decided to cash in on it? Because I assumed that that was the plan all along.
Okay. Well, the thing is the headline does not say. So the headline leads me down the rosy path of thinking, oh, my God, look at what you can do. And yes, it's an irritant. I'm sure it's against the law to, you know, to misrepresent, but it was more kind of, it felt more funny than not. And the way they were leading the story, they don't tell you the end result. Now, if you just says, you know, crook, you know, gets caught in mail fraud story, then you sort of lead with
sure.
the crime. So that's,
right, yeah.
It may have been the way it was presented. But anyway.
So let's just say that he wasn't going to actually spend the money here.
Yes.
He really was just doing it as, you know, he was just being a crank yanker. Do you like pranks? I feel like we are not in a huge prank culture right now as much as we were about 5 years ago. 5 years ago, everything was about viral videos, pranks, flash mobs, which are not really pranks, but like kind of like, what's going on around me? And I hated that. I hate the end of the last decade. It was just like prank culture. Jimmy Kimmel has some very, very popular bits that are kind of prank related. Remember like when they were Olympic related? This is a while back. I can't remember the details. And I just don't know if I'm a no fun Nick, if it's my age. I hate prank culture.
Yeah. No, the thing is, to me, now that's interesting. If there was a personal embarrassment issue, I hate it. That's what I hate about pranks.
Interesting. Okay.
That you're somehow, but because this is kind of at UPS, anybody's at UPS thinking, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so humiliated. I don't really think so. I think this is just one of those things that you know you can do. When you live in a huge, you know, nation of 300 million people, these kinds of things fall through the crack, and this is a guy who just manipulated the system. So I see it as a systematic kind of joke on the system. And then he said, okay, I mean, he could have just gone public with it, made it viral, and said, look at what happened here, and go on. Now, if there are real-life consequences, you know, for instance, if those checks were to somehow keep – you know, grandma in a home for another year, and the check never arrived or something. I mean, if they're real life consequences, no, I don't like that.
Oh, you don't think UPS has a grandma?
Well, no, but the idea is the checks that were given to UPS that they were then dispersing.
Right. No, I dig it.
Anyway, but no, yeah, I like that idea of a prank culture. Yeah, I'm not one for pranks as a rule either.
Yeah,
maybe it's my age too, Andrew.
let's see. Do we have time here? Yeah. Sorry, I keep on asking. I'm new here. I don't know how much time we have. So there was also this story while we're talking about malfeasance. Sure, let's go with that. There's also a story about a robocaller. He was in Florida running an operation. I can't remember how many millions of dollars, but bringing in like tens of millions of dollars with this operation. Maybe you have more details than I do by setting up a robocall situation. And I think we're mostly familiar with these. This is you get a call on your phone. It's, you know, some sort of pre-recorded message that says we have a great deal for you. And if you press one right now, we'll connect you with an operator. And then if you press one, then you're talking to a real person who's a scammer who's going to try to do a pivot on you and basically get your money and not give you whatever you thought you were getting.
Yeah,
right?
This,
robocalls.
This hits close to home because my mother, who's 87, gets these calls all the time, and it's like she thinks it's somebody, you know, who she wants to answer the phone, you know, answer the phone for, and it's not. It's like it's sometimes a local number, and you go, what? And it turns out to be just one of these scams. And this one guy had this, he testified before Congress, actually, he's king of robocalls. He says, no, I'm not. But anyway, he's gotten into trouble because what he does is he primarily preys on the elderly and says, hey, this is going to happen. And what happens, you know, they say, oh, you know, I've got Expedia, some, you know, really, you know, reputable company. And then they end up switching and say, well, no, actually, we want to. And it's one of these scams. They try to sell you, you know.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
swampland in Florida.
Yeah.
But here's the one thing, and I hear the music playing, but I just want to say this really quickly because I thought this was fascinating. I get robocalls on my phone all the time. I usually don't answer them, but I notice so many of them come in with the first six digits exactly like my phone number.
Yeah.
And I have an out-of-state phone number. It's like 603 for New Hampshire and then
specific.
The next three numbers.
Yeah.
And it turns
what
out
are they?
That that is... a tactic that is called spoofing or neighbor spoofing. And a lot of robocalls now will figure out what your number is. And so if your first six digits is 202111, those calls are coming in from 202111 something, 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 so that you think it's somebody in your neighborhood, somebody who's got some sort of connection.
So
to
you're
you.
More apt to
that
answer
is,
it because it's a local call. Brilliant.
Kind of.
But
infuriating.
But sneaky and now illegal.
All right. The funky music tells me that it is time for me to tell you that we are wrapping up pretty soon, but not before we open up the old mailbag, which I assume is overflowing with just compliments on you and me and our radio personalities.
Especially
and of course,
more Andrew.
Yes, and of course, our political outlook. So we're going to hear what you guys have to say about everything when we get back here on the Tom and Curly Show on Cairo Radio.
Welcome to the final segment of the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here. Andrew Walsh filling in for I guess he's auctioneering today in California for a good cause. John Curly, he'll be back on Monday. And now we have Tom and Curly's mailbag, which is presented by Doug's Linwood Mazda. We're looking for the mailman over the hill. Thank you, Doug's Linwood Mazda.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Okay, Andrew, at this point of the day, John usually turns to me and says, what do you see? What do you like? And so I'm going to do the return the favor and ask you to... reach into that mailbag and read something you particularly like.
Yeah, see, I just feel like you're setting me up here because the listeners know that I don't get to choose it. You make it sound like it's my choice, but then you hand me a piece of paper and you say I got to read the first one. And the first one here is somebody saying something nice about me.
I don't know
if that's representative of most of your audience. I will read it, but I want people to think that I'm being self-serving here.
You are doth protesting too much.
I am, but no. I will say thank you much to Alex in West Seattle, who apparently texted and said, Andrew Walsh, 4 exclamation points, my morning is markedly improved. 1 more exclamation point. I don't know if Alex is actually my girlfriend Genevieve using a nom de plume, but I will take it. Thank
Surely
you, Genevieve
not.
Slash Alex.
Is she that complimentary to you?
No,
on a daily
probably
basis?
Not. I couldn't think of anybody who would say anything nice about me, actually.
Maybe your mom. Looking forward to that nice Hallmark card in the mail.
All right. What else we got?
And 509 weighs in. Wow. This guest host makes the Tommyness sound like Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, that's my mom. Yeah. No, that's her writing in. Got one from the 206. Says, oh, yay, John's gone. Great news. I won't have to mute half the show. I didn't think that's where that was going. I thought they were being sarcastic.
Right. Oh. And 425. Oh, great. Nothing better than two fascist liberals barking at each other in an echo chamber.
I don't think I'm a fascist. Am I a fascist?
All liberals are fascists.
Oh, my gosh. Here's one from the 425. Why always Andrew? Can't afford Luke?
Oh.
Now, that's a good question, and the answer is probably not. He works for CBS News now.
Ouch. Okay, so we start off with a very contentious and lively discussion of the head tax. Yes, head tax. Yes, head tax. That's Andrew's heading for us. Kathy in Auburn writes in, wrong. Where is Mr. C.? Thanks for bringing some balance back, Tom. Amazon and the corporations are not at fault for our homeless crisis. It is because the idiots running the show, Sawant, continue to tax the little people to death and waste millions of dollars on freebies. That is what's driving people here. The fact that we allow this crap to continue. Other cities are putting the kibosh on vagrants, and they are walking over our borders to get in for the free stuff. Soon as we quit handing out freebies, they'd leave.
That's amazing. That's like art. Here's from Sean, a small business owner in Bellingham, on the quote-unquote head tax issue. On one side, I'm not sure that large corporations should be taxed on a level that all other businesses in Seattle will not be taxed. But on the other side, many of those same large corporations are not taxed at the same rate as many small businesses. Mm-hmm. And some, like Amazon, don't even pay the same sales taxes. Whichever side you fall on this issue, I expected that with John Curley gone and Andrew Walsh filling in, at least one of you would not have come to the defense of Amazon. Jeff Bezos gets more tax breaks than any other business in Seattle, and he has made it very clear that his goal is to sell to everyone everything that they buy. Andrew, next time you click that Amazon buy button, I hope you think about one of your favorite small businesses that does battle with Goliath every day. I wish I'd know what, because these are things I think about. Like, I won't dismiss that at all. I mean, this is a nuanced issue, and if I ever made it sound like it was black and white, I apologize, and I do think about that.
Wow.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Already, we had so many great letters from all you people. Unfortunately, we can't get to it all. But now we want to hear from Andy from The Road Less Traveled.
How come Andrew gets to get up?
Hi-ho, fellas, and my fellow Andrews. And how the hell did you not see this coming, Tom? Fellas, born an Andrew, with the exception of a brief affectation in my teens, I have always been an Andy. And here's what I think are general stereotypes about Andys that may not be perceived in an Andrew. I'm a great lover of whimsy, the printed word, a good glass of bourbon, and a cold beer. I don't hard scrabble for a dollar, as I feel a life spent only gaining wealth is a life misspent. I take no fish from the lake that won't end up on a plate, and though I love sports, competing in my own life is dreadful. And I think Andrews are perceived that way, where Andys are more like myself, whimsical, kind, and happy-ish. Go Red Sox.
Bye-bye.